Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 18, Bad to the Bone, original air date April 1st, 2004. Director David Grossman, writers Anthony E. Zeiker and Eli Talbert. And we start today's episode with shots of the Vegas Strip before we head inside of a casino. But before then, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
We have a fairly paltry 19. I was remarking earlier that most of these points happen in the first 60 seconds.
Yes, it's a very front-loaded Vegas episode, and then it just basically crashes.
I thought Vegas goes. It's two scenes at the beginning. It's like 7 or 8 seconds, and then you're in a casino, and so I gave a couple bonus points. There's one scene at the 7-minute mark, and that is the last shot of the Vegas Strip you see.
Wow.
I did give 2 points for the... I felt it was in the spirit of the Vegas score. There is Diner that plays not an important role, but a repetitive role.
In
the episode. Yeah. And it has like Vegas-y lights. There's this like camera shot. And so I gave it a few points. It's like, fair. It felt very Vegas-y.
Yeah.
Even though it's supposed to be somewhere else in Nevada. But I mean, like, I felt like if I... It was a helicopter shot, but I felt like if I was coming into this place by helicopter, I would think, I bet you I can gamble there.
Yeah, like I'm sure there can be some, I think some gambling can be afoot.
It's just like 4 buildings with desert around it. So
fair,
it's like,
fair.
You know, real old school Vegas.
Yeah.
Pre-Rat Pack days.
So we go inside this casino and we join and I labeled him, we'll learn. Spoiler alert, it's a victim. But I labeled him at this point Angry Mullet Man.
Oh, that's a good name.
So Angry Mullet Man.
Grumpy big dude.
Yeah. Angry Mullet Man seems to be following somebody around through this casino and then into like a parking lot area. We then have Jim Brass and Grissom with dead Angry Mullet Man. Appears robbery not a motive though. Like, they have chips on them, they still have their wallet, and we learn that the victim is Tony Sciarra?
Something like that.
Sciarra? From Philadelphia. We then go to credits. We come back to the scene, now Warwick and Catherine are there, they're taking pictures, they're collecting evidence. Jim Brass is debriefing Grissom that the victim hadn't even, like, settled into their hotel. They essentially, like, just, like, threw their bags down, and then they were like hauling ass through the casino. And as Catherine is looking at the victim, she is wondering if all the damage that has been done, especially like to his face, if it was just with fists, like was it just hand-to-hand combat that resulted in this? Yeah. We then go to Sarah and Nick with a like the tech surveillance person from the casino, and this is my first. Spot
first,
the guest star. Yes,
I have 0.
I have 2. This is number 1. And I okay. So the first time I watched this episode, I was like, I think I know him. And then I went, no, I think he looks like somebody else. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, no, like he does kind of look like somebody else, but that's I don't think that that's it. And so I opened his IMDb. And as first looking through it, I was like, there's no way I know this person, right? Like, I'm looking through their IMDb, and I was like, nope. Like, there's no way I know this person. I do, in fact, know this person. And it is going to be from a movie that I referenced, I think, earlier on in this season, called Dead and Breakfast.
Yeah.
He is Deputy... I think it's supposed to be, like, a play on anus, but it's, like, Enus.
Enus?
Enus. And that's where I know them from.
Not from the 9 episodes of the hit series The Pacellus.
No, I didn't. I haven't watched that one. So this is my first Spot the Guest Star. We're not with this Spot the Guest Star very long. They're just watching the footage of the victim. And they, as they find him on the surveillance, they realize that another guy was like snaking him, was like taking his chips while he was gambling, and the victim busted him. So they're like, okay, we need like a still image of this thief. We then have Grissom with Doc Robbins in the morgue, and confirmed it was bare knuckles that did this damage to this person's face. And like two, like he's so beaten up that Doc Robbins notes that it's like the most brutal beating that like he has ever like ever come through his morgue. And as they continue to talk, Grissom is thinking that there wasn't multiple people attacking this victim. This was like a one-on-one beating.
Old-fashioned fisticuffs.
Old-fashioned fisticuff, just one-on-one. We then have Jim Brass and Nick talking to a maid. She saw the suspect in the bathroom. She also sees him now as she's kind of like looking towards a restaurant. So they go inside the restaurant. They arrest a guy. He's wearing different clothing, though, but it is the same guy. We then have Jim Brass and Grissom with the suspect, who we now learn is Walter, in interrogation. And Jim Brass is trying to get him to talk. He's like not saying anything until Jim Brass insinuates that maybe he's gay. And then he was like, no. But that gets him talking a little bit. And he says that what he whispered, the sweet nothings that he whispered to the victim was, give me a reason. AKA, like, just give me a reason to beat your face in.
Beat you to death.
Yeah. During this, Grissom lets him know, like, hey, I need to, like, I want to see your fingers. I need to, like, you know, process underneath your fingernails. And as he goes to touch him, he's like, do you have a fever? Which this will be brought up. His temperature is brought up several times. And he's, like, clenching his fists and his face is all angry. And then Walter attacks Grissom. And then officers run in. He's attacking the officers. They subdue him by beating him pretty brutally with a nightstick.
Surprisingly, didn't hit him that many times with the nightstick. I felt like there were too many officers.
Yeah.
They were in the way.
So they subdue him, and he did.
They just sort of starts dead fishing. Yeah. They're like, they're still wrestling into the ground a bit.
Yeah, but he was gone. So then David and Catherine are with Walter. And Catherine asks, like, oh, do we have to double check the temperature? Because it's still higher than they would think it was. And David's like, I've already checked twice. This is what this person's temperature is right now. The sheriff arrives. He doesn't think this looks good. Doesn't think the scene is looking good for anybody. And then Catherine approaches Grissom. She notices the wound on his neck. Tells him it looks like a hickey.
I don't know why.
It seems fairly unprofessional. And we learn that Walter's liver temp an hour after death is 101.5, meaning that when he died, his temperature approximately would have been 103 degrees. So then Nick and Sarah are with Walter's car, which is just full of stuff. Filled to the brim with stuff.
Real hoarder level.
Yes, perfect hoarder level for sure. And as they're looking through the car, Nick finds a box of chips, and he also finds a waitress uniform for someone called Libby that has burn holes in it. And there's a discussion between Nick and Sarah of maybe, because he has this entire box of chips, which is like worth thousands of dollars, just sitting in his car. And so the thought is, maybe he just likes to steal things to steal things versus stealing things for monetary gain.
Yeah. They don't get too into that, whether it's like, I don't know, there's a couple different motivators for why people would do something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Either way, it's the outcome is the same, right? He's not, the thrill of stealing is probably the driver. So like after he beat the guy to death, he's not interested in robbing him.
Yeah, yeah. We then see Doc Robbins with Walter. Grissom enters. We learn that the cause of death is not due to the police attacking him. It was, in fact, due to cardiac arrhythmia. He has, like, no prior condition that Doc Robbins can, like, note at this time to, like, explain why this happened. Tox report is pending. And then there's just a conversation about how some people run hot. Robbins is, like, 98.6 is just, like, the average temperature. Some people run hotter. And I will say that my average is 97.7.
Yeah, a lot of people run colder. I think a lot of people, the vast majority of people run very close to 98.6. I think running hotter is actually, I think, much rarer.
I think it is rarer.
There are certain benefits to being hot. Like, when you get sick, you get a fever because you choose to get, like, your body makes you get a fever, usually so you could produce more like white blood cells.
Yeah.
And so you could fight whatever is infecting you. But also because, like, the things that are infecting you are often designed to infect you at like 98 to 99.99.
And so
if I get your temperature up to like 103, and then it messes with their chemistry, there can be a benefit as well. So being able to regulate your heat is that. 101 or 102, whatever number they
103
gave,
would have been his temperature when he died.
Yeah.
That's too hot.
Like, I get what Dr. Robin's saying. There's a, not everyone's exactly on everyone's sex, but that would be probably a medical condition in of itself.
I would think so.
I would, like, if in today's medicine world, I would think that if I was a patient and my doctor was prescribing a medication and my normal temperature was 103 for some reason, my doctor might want to be checking to make sure, like, the medicine isn't going to, like,
yeah, like, not work as,
But, like, my dog's, I think a dog's temperature is like a few degrees. I don't know if it's five, but warmer than a human. Like, there are a lot of other animals run at different temperatures.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like it's sort of a quirky thing. I felt very sort of like led on. Like, I thought this was going to be a really important part of,
oh, like, solving, like,
that why way he is or something.
And
they're just sort of like trying to explain it away, and then it's like, I don't know, it just felt so unfulfilling. They're like, but also because it was so high that I was like, I feel like maybe that's like, I bet you there's a very countable, like, probably in the number of fingers you have of people alive in the world today who run anywhere close to 103 degrees as your standard temperature.
Yeah. I would think so as well.
I mean, and so, yeah, it was just like one of the weirdest things in the episode. Yeah. I was just like, really? What do you mean? Like, you're a doctor? You should know how odd this is. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
I don't think anybody would dismiss 103.
I don't think so either.
As some people run hot.
Yeah. If it was like, okay, it was like 99.5, then you'd be like, yeah, some people run a little bit, you know, like 98.6 is the average. So, like, maybe people, you know, maybe some people hover around 100 degrees as a.
I'm going to find a chart with the distribution. Yeah. Once you get over 100 degrees, it's very rare.
Yeah.
The average is actually 97.7.
Okay, yeah, because I'm 97.7 is like my...
You're pretty close to 98.6. I wonder if it's like a male, female...
Oh, I wonder if it is.
...thing, or maybe different...
Oh, like, I wonder, I wonder if, like, since
I've... World.
I wonder if since I started tea, if my average temperature is up.
No, it's possible.
It's possible.
I feel like most of the people... I know when you're older, like, a lot of times people maybe a little cooler and colder and are more likely to dress up, but I think in general... There's sort of this idea that often, like, more masculine, muscular body temperature bodies tend to be warmer, and like smaller and lighter bodies tend to be cooler. And that comes up a lot when people are trying to regulate the temperature at home or an office.
Yeah, an office.
Or, you know, like, we think about how many people are wearing sweatshirts and shawls and,
yeah.
You know, things, or blankets, right? There's definitely a lot of variation. But so, yeah, I wonder if that has something to do with it. But yeah, there is definitely people with warmer temperatures, but it seems like it drops off pretty hard at around 100 degrees.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I think to get all the way up to 100, and like this one chart I have basically goes from 96 to 101, which means it's not a non-zero number of people, like 100, 101, which I don't think I really knew, but it's still 103.
It's very high.
It's going to be super.
Yeah, no, I agree. So we talk about this. This comes up again in the next scene where we see the sheriff with Walter's sister, who we learn is Beth Darien. And the sheriff is letting her know that her brother died in police custody. Grissom walks in. And at first, you kind of think she's going to be upset about it. Like, she's just like, oh, yeah, like, he, you know, he died in police custody. But what we find throughout this conversation is that Walter has hurt a lot of people, and she's just relieved that it's over. And she asks Grissom, like, is that how he touched your life? And pointing to, like, the wound on his neck. And she does confirm with Grissom that he has run hot since he was a kid. Like, he's that is like a condition that he has had since they were young children growing up. We then have Grissom and Warwick at a motel. We learn that it is Walter's motel. He is also a hoarder at home, so it is not regulated to just his car when it comes to his hoarding tendencies. As they're inside the motel, they're looking out. They see a wheelbarrow. They go outside. They find a very oddly pouring of concrete. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
I think at one point they call it, like, maybe a patio or something.
Yeah, no, I think Warwick goes, this doesn't look like a patio.
Square.
I think Warwick says, this isn't a patio. Yeah. Like, this doesn't make sense. This isn't a patio. And so...
All right, felt like the first time I watched this, I was confused. The second time I watched this, I tried to like listen in for this piece of information. Does he live here or does he own this?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Because I referred to it as his motel a couple of times, but for some reason, I don't know if I just missed it or glanced away or something where they said like he, like, or they never actually said like, oh, this is the, he owns this hotel or something. But yeah, they definitely gave you the impression that he owns it.
They did. No, they. Yeah. I think in this scene, at the beginning of it, I think Grissom makes a very quick, like, this is where he lives and he owned it.
Okay.
So he was both, that he owned the motel and he lived at the motel as well. So we then have Nick and Sarah at a diner. And Libby was, and okay, kudos to the waitress that is still there. Because if I worked with somebody for one day, 8 years ago, I am going to remember zero details of that.
Also, like,
zero details of it.
Like, you're never going to remember their name. I don't know. Yeah, it's impressive.
It's impressive. So Libby was there 8 years ago, made it one day, like, spilled grease on herself or coffee on herself. And first and last day, they don't have any records. But well, don't worry. We'll continue talking about Libby throughout this episode. We then have Warwick drilling through said quote-unquote patio. And I did have to note, I was like, I feel like it's like a little bit of willy-nilly drilling. Like, did you scan it first?
Oh, they like
drilling
no
into
idea.
The
concrete?
Yeah.
I mean, like, this whole thing is kind of like...
I just feel like there wasn't a lot
this
of like...
case. It's this scene is like not related to it. We searched this house. We saw a patio on the ground and we're like... This seems weird. Let's just dig up this yard.
Let's just dig it up. He's dead. We don't need a warrant.
Presumably you have to get a warrant to do that, right?
I mean, he's dead, so I don't know. It's his, the person whose property it is dead.
I mean, his estate owns it. They have rights.
That's fair.
You can't just...
maybe his sister... Right? Maybe his sister is, like, his only living relative.
Yeah. But
and so maybe she gave.
She might have.
They definitely didn't go over that, but...
Spoiler, big mistake on her part.
Big mistake on her part. We'll find out. So they're digging through the concrete. Grissom is there. There's like other techs on scene. They're like processing it. And then Warwick dings into bone. And as they brush it away, it is a human skull. This brings Jim Brass onto the scene. Warwick uncovers a wedding band, but there's nothing at the moment. There's nothing gender specific about the bones. Like the band is like could be a man or a woman's band. They, you know, they're not able to like make that estimation. Grissom, though, as they're trying to determine how long these bones have been in the ground, takes a whiff of said skull and guesses that it has been buried there for more than 3 years because the skull doesn't smell anymore.
I would say he definitively states it must be at least 3 years old.
He does. Yeah, he does. He is very sure about this. And as they're continuing to excavate, they find a knife under the pelvis bone. So this will also play a pretty key role in this episode. We then have Warwick with Doc Robbins and the bones, which now Doc Robbins is saying are female. The person never gave birth. They are likely Caucasian. Somewhere in the late teens, early 20s, based on molars erupting and all that good stuff. We have Grissom in his office. Catherine enters and she's like, how did you know about like this body at the motel? And Grissom's like, I didn't. But all the like tox results and everything came back and they're all negative. And just like from, you know, from that murder and then, you know, him attacking Grissom and then attacking the police officers and then like the conversation with the sister, Grissom is like, how is this this person's first arrest. Like, how has this person
done something?
Yeah.
Heinous or
So Kristen's violent, like, that really just doesn't. Catherine gets a call during this. She has a little flirty. Put that on pause. We'll talk about it later with our spot, the guest star, who this better not be a credit for him, because he's only, I think you what said, five episodes, her new beau is in. We then have a walk and talk with Greg Sanders, Catherine, and Grissom. Jane Doe, as they are calling her at the moment, because she's not identified, not reported missing. Like, they put her DNA into the database, didn't get any results. And there another thing is that there is foreign DNA in her pelvis, and it has to be based on, like, the shared number of alleles, either her father or her son's DNA, yes. Which brings up a conversation, well, she never gave birth, so how could it be the son? We'll circle back around to that.
I was trying to remember, do they have the photo piece with her?
Nope.
And yeah, so they don't know that she was pregnant. I was like, on the second watch through, I felt like I was like, wait a second, why don't they just automatically rule that out?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, because they had no reason to think.
They had no reason to think at this time. Nope. The next few scenes, we kind of flip back and forth between them. I'm going to kind of describe them more just as they first appear versus trying to do it back and forth. We have one set of scenes with Nick and Archie as they're using the skull and software to create an image of the victim. We have work at the motel. We see some of the items being transported back to HQ. He finds a hair with a tag in it and a baseball cap. Catherine's also at the motel. This is where she opens the suitcase, finds a ripped picture of a pregnant couple and also maternity clothes, and finds an ID that belongs to a Marissa Cleary. We then have Catherine and Grissom talking, and this is where they confirm that the foreign DNA was her son's. But for some reason, I felt like this probably annoyed you too. Grissom's a very smart person, right? Very smart person. He's so hung up on the fact that she didn't give birth.
Yeah.
And Catherine's like, there are other ways to have a baby than to, like, give birth through the birth canal. Like, there are other methods.
I also like that he's immediately like, oh, yeah, and we found a hunting knife buried with the body. And it's like, it's like he got there so quickly that, like, you're the one with the information. Like, you should have been able to make that jump. But also, like, I didn't quite understand why, from your skeletal only remains, you are so convinced that she never gave birth. Like, I try to remember if Doc Robbins or somebody said something.
He did.
Like, if you give birth, this would have happened.
He didn't get that. He just said, like, either the shape of her birth canal, like, there must be some physiological change that happens if you give birth vaginally, as someone who has never done so. I'm not the best person to talk to about this.
It's so weird, because, like, also babies are like such different sizes,
right?
Like, it would probably have a very different impact if you're, like, a 7.5 month preemie baby versus, like, a term
baby. Yeah, like 12 pound baby.
Yeah, so it's like it all comes together to this, like, oh, she clearly could not have given birth. Despite the fact that, again, Doc Robbins is a doctor.
Yes.
He went to medical school.
He did.
He's aware.
And sometimes he's a medical genius.
Sometimes not.
Yeah, sometimes not so much. So we then have Catherine and Jim Brass talking to the other half of the picture. So the not pregnant woman part of the picture in interrogation. And this is my second spot. The guest star.
I thought this could be a spot the guest star, because I thought this guy looked kind of familiar. But I put my head together and I said, I have no idea. He mostly just reminds me of Daniel from Stargate.
Okay.
And I was like, I think it's just that. I think he just looks like a nerdy guy.
Yeah. So this is Josh Stewart, and I know him from Criminal Minds. He plays William LaMontagne Jr., and he's in 28 episodes of Criminal Minds. So that's how I know him.
I looked it up, like when I looked at the list afterwards, and I think I even clicked on his thing, and I was like, I don't recognize him for any of this.
Yeah. So that's how I know him, and that's my second and final spot the guest star for the episode. And he explains to Jim Ross and Catherine that he never reported Marissa missing because he thought she left of her own accord. Like, they got pregnant young, they got married young, they got into this big fight when she was 9 months pregnant, she left, and then he got a letter from her. He got this type letter that basically said, like, you don't want me, you don't want the baby, we don't need you, have a nice life, basically. So he just thought that she left of her own accord and was like, oh, okay, like, I'm 19, I'm off of the hook, I guess. Great.
I can imagine that. A lot of 19-year-olds thinking
that way. Yeah. I mean, your brain is not fully developed. It's fine.
Well, it's just a very human thing, too, to just be like, have a lot of anxiety, worry, and stress about something. And then someone says, I'm going to take this problem away. And you just be like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I think the actor did a decent job of, like, you could tell he's remorseful and regretful. Like, yeah. He didn't really want that to be the outcome.
No.
It probably took him a while to get there. It wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't immediate. Yeah, because we learned that this is like now 8, almost 9 years later that this happened, right? So now, theoretically, this person is like, you know, 26, 27. And so probably now brain fully developed in a bit of a different headspace. We have a scene where Greg Sanders is processing the hair from the cap that Warwick collected. We have Catherine with the paper guy. I was like, oh, still here. He points out that the signature on the letter that was given to the husband is not Marissa's signature. It is, in fact, a forgery. And he doesn't know at this time if Catherine thinks Walter forged it. Paper guy's like, I can't. I need a exemplar.
Yeah.
We have to, like, look through stuff at his house to try to get, like, enough.
Who are we comparing to?
Yeah, like, who are we comparing to? But one thing that we do know at this point is that it was not printed on any of the printers that they have collected from Walter's motel. So it was printed somewhere else. We have Sarah analyzing the envelope. We have Greg Sanders with Grissom and Catherine. The hair collected from the cap is Marissa's son. Bum, bum, bum. Sarah enters with another piece of the puzzle.
This is like one of those pieces of evidence that this is also like an open-ended question at the end. You never get an answer for where this hat comes from.
No, we don't. No. And so Sarah enters. She has another piece of the puzzle. The letter mailed to the husband was mailed from Henderson. And that's weird because, like, that's not where Walter lives.
No.
And, like, why would Walter go to Henderson to mail out a letter? Like, that seems strange. This brings us to Grissom and Catherine with the sister at her home in Henderson.
I guess it's not, like, the only time they go to someone's house, and I know why they're here. It's important to the storyline. But it's, like, I'm almost surprised that it wasn't just, like, a phone call or could you come in?
Like, can you come in? We have a few questions,
like,
for you.
You know, if you're in Henderson, you're like, yeah, we want to go out there. You never know if she could be like, direct you to a neighbor or something. You never know where the plot's going to go. Like, that. Where you're going to want to go. So it's not that weird. I was immediately like, before I knew why, I was like, wait, why are they in her house?
Yeah, like, I know this doesn't make any
sense
to me. She
came down to, like, she knows where.
Yeah, she's been to HQ. Like, she's capable of getting there. So in this conversation, we get a flashback to Walter killing Marissa. We also learn that the sister is Libby. Yeah. She is the waitress. And she's very confused as to, like, why Walter kept her uniform from 8 years ago, from the one day that she was a terrible waitress. And as they're continuing to talk to her, she's getting a little uncomfortable. They're like, what's going on? She's like, oh, nothing. She's like, just don't like talking about Walter. Like, he's done a lot of terrible things. But what she's uncomfortable with is that a school bus comes and drops off her very blonde son. And he comes in the house. And we learn that he is 8, about to be 9 years old. And he has a little
scar.
A little scar on his face. So we see Catherine swabbing inside the boy's mouth to get DNA. We also see Grissom swabbing inside the father's mouth, which, is that necessary?
Like, well,
you have Marissa's DNA.
Well, I think it's so that they can confirm that he's the father.
I know, but like,
so that
he can get custody.
Other legal purposes.
Yeah. That's.
I think they already knew that she wasn't going to be the mother. They don't show her being swabbed, but they indicate that they do swab her as well.
Yes. So in the very next scene, we have Grissom and Catherine with the sister, now in interrogation, and she admits that Walter dropped off a baby 8 years ago. Just showed up with a baby, left a baby. And at first she's trying to say, because they were like, okay, you didn't report this, you didn't, like, you just took this kid in from your, like, psychotic brother and just went, all right, I'm just gonna roll with the punches here and not do anything.
Middle of the night, your brother shows up and hands you a baby. You don't ask any questions. You don't report it.
Walter said that the mother was a runaway and that she didn't want the baby. I took him in. I love him.
How did Martin get this scar on his forehead?
I don't know.
Or you didn't want to know.
So at first she tries to claim, like, oh, well, he told me the mother was a runaway. But then we learn that she's the one who wrote the letter because, unlike Walter, she didn't want the father to suffer. So she wanted to give him, like, some closure, some peace of mind, some, like, hey, don't wonder about what happened.
I like that she's like, I found this photograph in this suitcase, right, that I guess Walter would have had to bring to her. And she's like, where did you get his address from? Like,
her license. They were married.
No. His. I had to get his address.
Yeah, they were married. Marissa and the father were married.
No. I mean, Libby or Beth.
So Marissa's license was in the suitcase.
Oh. In other words, it's the same address.
It's the same address.
Oh, I see.
That would be my guess.
Wait, they were married?
Yeah. They were dating for a few months. They got pregnant. They quote unquote did the right thing. Got married.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then they started fighting.
I got the feeling from like the fighting and I don't want to see you again. He didn't like go home. So he had to go somewhere.
I think she checked into a motel and he stayed at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are all there. I think I just missed that all.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair. I mean, I have to write this all down. So I have a lot more time to like think through they didn't do a good job of explaining this. This is my conclusion after writing it down.
I definitely also know that like this episode I was really having a hard time. It's such a depart from the formula.
Yes, it is. It is definitely a
that I was like having a hard time like following the thread at times. I was like, wait, what? Why are they? Why are they doing this?
Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
So that's not quite the end of the episode, very close to it. We get one final scene where we follow Grissom as he walks to an evidence room that has like all of this stuff that they took from Walter. And he continues looking through it and he pulls out a bloody shirt. And then that is the end of the episode. So, Nick, what did you think about this non-conventional CSI episode?
It wasn't like bad, but it wasn't good.
I love the pause. You were like,
I actually was surprised how easy it was to watch the second time, although I do not give it a rewatch. It just felt, I feel like if this was a pilot, I'd be like, we're not picking up this show. Like, this is not your finest work. I don't get what they were trying to do, is I think my problem with this episode. And I wonder, it feels like it was edited poorly. I always never know who to throw under the bus, but when an episode isn't as good as another. But yeah, I don't think it was edited well. I also didn't understand the end of this episode. I was like, I said I would like to think this is going to come up again. If it doesn't, there were a bunch of there was another time where they were looking at his clothes and their other like bloody clothes. And I started to think, like, how many people has this guy killed?
Yeah, you're like, how many right? people have been murdered yeah, by this like, guy? Is he yeah, like, yeah.
Serial killer. And I don't know. I think I wanted the episode to go somewhere else or deeper or broader. It just seemed like a very bland storyline. I'm still not entirely sure they had any right. I mean, I guess, you know, he was a murderer. They could look for evidence, but like, they're like digging up this guy's backyard to find this other body. Are you going to dig up the rest of the yard? Like, how many,
right.
who knows how many bodies there are back there? Like in my head, I feel like we only got half the story. Also, the mom. I assume she's not going to be the mom any longer. And he's going to go live with his dad, but they don't ever show you or tell you that.
Right. Yes, we have no definitive. She's
keeping that child. This poor child.
No.
His whole life is about to change in a very traumatic way.
In a very traumatic way.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a weird episode. It left me, it's a very messy story.
Yeah. And it's nice, like, it's nice in some ways that the father was like, oh, can I see my son? But, like, this is, again, almost 9 years later. You didn't, like, even try to find her. Or your kid in the 9 years. You know what I mean? Like,
you didn't try very hard.
You didn't try very hard.
Try to track her down. Yeah, you have a lot. You had the legal right to have your father if you wanted to enforce it for the last 9 years.
Right. And you didn't.
And I don't think she's going to jail. I think she can claim a lot of things like that probably serve as a defense. Like literal fear that her brother is going to come back and murder her.
Right.
If she goes to the police.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Which is that self-defense, basically, is often a defense. And then it's like, okay, but how about years later? It's like, well, once I was in love, like, this is now my child. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I don't know what the rules are. I'm sure in the eyes of the law, it's not your child. But, like, from a mental standpoint, like, I don't know. You put one mother on that jury, I don't think she's going to convict this woman.
Right, because she's, yeah, because they're just going to be like...
you know, if you told me my child was swapped to the hospital and my biological child was dead and now the biological parents of this child want to take my child away, I would never, ever, ever, you would have to pry, you know, kill me, right? So it's like, it's such a weird, it's so many open-ended questions and I was just sort of like... You know me, I do like a nice buttoned up story.
You do. You do. You like it all. Yeah, you like it a nice little like wrapped present at the end.
I'm happy with like next time on CSI and like learning this stuff.
Yeah,
later.
Yeah.
But like we get that usually isn't what happens, right?
No.
And so it's because I want my questions answered. This is
That's
why I
fair.
Can't. This is why I'll never watch a show like Lost.
Right. That's fair. It's good to know that about
never
yourself.
Never answering questions.
Yeah.
It's, So yeah, I actually give it 2.5 stars, by the way. I didn't think I said that yet.
Yeah.
There was a moment where I was going to give it 2. I was like, it wasn't that
bad. Yeah.
I just didn't like it.
That's fair. I gave it a 3 out of 5 for pretty similar reasons. Like, there's definitely things that I was like, was there a scene that made sense of this and you just like edit it out? Like, was there a thing where like, oh yeah, this crazy medical condition that causes you to like run at 103 degrees can cause you to be a complete sociopath and like, oh wow, okay, so this is like why Walter was the way Walter was.
Or anger issues. Or...
Yeah, you know, like that would have been cool. But similar to you, like the second watch through was pretty good. Like the first watch through was fine. So this is actually funny because Nick pinged me and like some time ago and was like, this is like the weirdest episode of CSI. And at this point, I had only done like 10-ish minutes of my first watch through of the episode, 10 or 15 minutes. And I didn't remember this episode at all. And so I sent Nick a message back and I was like, I don't remember this episode. Like, I know I've seen it. I've seen it multiple times. I did end up getting to a point in the episode that I was like, oh, it's this episode. Okay. And like got myself caught back up. But I will say it was a little unnerving to be watching CSI and being like, ringing like any bells for me. Like, I don't. But I think because the ending is such a journey from where you start that the beginning of the episode doesn't remind you of the end of the episode. Right. And a lot of times when I'm watching it, I'll be like, oh, right. Like, this is how it starts. And then this is how it ends. But because the journey is like wiggly waggly on this one, I was like, I don't remember this. And then maybe like 15 or 20 minutes in, I was like, never mind, I do remember this. I just forgot that this is how it started. But I still feel like I enjoyed the episode. Everybody was involved.
Sort of. I mean, there was a lot of like loose involvement, I feel like. Like, yeah. Sarah's like out of most of the episode.
Yeah.
He's like, hey guys, remember me?
I'm here.
I was going to get this letter for the last 2 days.
I'm playing an important part of this you're episode.
And then never show me again.
Never show me again. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed watching it. The second watch through wasn't bad. I do, even when it doesn't like always land, I do appreciate that they're willing to try different things. Like that, I do appreciate the willingness to go out on a limb and try something a little bit different. So 3 out of 5, it's a decent episode. If you're like Nick and you like it all nice little bow at the end, probably not the episode for you. But we'll see how we feel about the wrapping up of our next episode when we return next week to review season 4, episode 19, Bad Words.
Another bad episode.
We mean with that in the title.
Yes.
But otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.